Hello, it's Sunday night, March 22nd, 2009, and I'm Eric Hufschmid. There's lots of news articles today about four policemen who were killed in California yesterday. I see this as another example of how every society is continuing to use the same idiotic policies towards crime that have proven to have a 100% failure rate. Every society believes that crime is caused by some mysterious force, such as ignorance, poverty, or the devil, and every society believes that they can reduce crime with security devices and by punishing criminals. The man who killed those policemen had already been punished with 6 years in prison for armed robbery, but his punishment didn't transform him into a respectable person. But nobody seems to care that these policies are failures. Occasionally, people complain about crime, but there's no attempt by government officials, school teachers, policemen, or anybody else to actually get together to discuss and develop a more effective and honest legal system. Our ancestors 1,000 years ago didn't have many security devices or policemen. Today we have advanced security devices all over our houses, businesses, and material items, and we have policemen patrolling our cities 24 hours a day. But where is the evidence that crime is lower today than it was 1,000 years ago? Our policies have been failures for centuries. The incident yesterday in which the policemen were killed is a good example. The man was stopped for a traffic violation, and he shot at two officers, killing one and destroying the brain of the other. He then escaped. Other policemen began searching for him. They soon discovered that he was hiding inside an apartment building. The police decided to go into the building in order to arrest him. The man responded by shooting at the policeman, killing two more of them. Once a person shows that he's willing to kill policemen or commit a crime, the police ought to consider that he's going to kill other policemen and commit other crimes. However, the police are told to follow the idiotic policy that every criminal might be a wonderful person who is simply suffering from poverty or needs to learn about Jesus, and therefore he should be captured alive and given a trial. And so the police risk their lives in order to capture even the most worthless and dangerous people. And in their attempt to capture dangerous criminals, the police are sometimes killed. But no society cares that this policy is failing us time after time. No society even shows any interest in developing a better banking or financial system, despite the fact that during the past few months we've been exposed to hundreds of news articles that clearly show widespread cheating and abuse among people in our banking and financial systems. As I've discussed in other audio files, I think the reason most people ignore these issues is because the human mind was designed for the simple life of 50,000 BC. Humans are just intelligent monkeys. The primary interest of men is to become the dominant male and have sex, and the primary interest of women is to have babies and be loved. We don't want to deal with the complex problems of modern society. We don't want to have to develop a better legal system or a better banking system. We want to feel special, and we want to entertain ourselves with sex and food and babies. Since each of us is genetically unique, there are subtle differences in our ability and desire to face the problems of the modern world. But unfortunately, those of us who have some ability and desire to deal with modern society are in a small minority, and it doesn't seem as if many of us are in positions of importance. The world seems to be dominated by the intelligent monkeys who react to problems by either ignoring the problems or by praying to some god to fix the problem. The inability of people to discuss the problems we face is causing every society to follow the same policies as their ancestors and make the same mistakes time after time. This brings up the issue of whether America will end up making the same mistakes as the communist nations in Nazi Germany. Perhaps I'm simply more sensitive today to the issue of Nazi concentration camps, but it seems to me as if the so-called truth seekers have been spending a lot more time than normal during the past few months talking about FEMA concentration camps, martial law, food shortages, world wars, and riots in the cities due to economic problems. If the police and military continue to behave like intelligent monkeys who refuse to face the problems of the modern world, they could give us a repeat of the idiotic arrests and prison camps of Nazi Germany and the communist nations. So I thought I should explain my current opinions about those FEMA camps. It was many years ago when George Bush was president that I first heard the accusations that FEMA was building concentration camps and special railroad cars to transport us to the camps. Supposedly, the evil Bush administration and the evil New World Order was going to send squads of stupid and corrupt policemen to our homes to arrest us and then send us to the FEMA camps so that we could be tortured and killed. The ultimate goal was supposedly to remove everybody from society who showed an ability to think for themselves, so that the New World Order would end up with a nation of submissive and mindless people who were happy to be their slaves. I dismissed those theories as the paranoid fantasies of somebody who was mentally ill and had been watching too many Nazi movies. Nothing about those theories made sense to me. For example, if the ultimate goal of the government was to torture and kill those of us who could think for ourselves, why would they waste their time and resources transporting us to FEMA camps? Why not just torture and kill us in the city that we live in? Furthermore, how many people in our government really want to torture us? I'm willing to believe that there are hundreds, maybe thousands of government employees who would love to work in a concentration camp and spend their lives torturing us, but I can't believe that our government has enough of these lunatics that they could actually implement such a policy on a large scale. However, after listening to the accusations for years, I've changed my mind about what these camps are. I think these FEMA camps are the equivalent of the Nazi camps, and I think that understanding the FEMA camps will help us understand the Nazi camps, and vice versa. First of all, take a look at who is warning us about the camps. You'll notice that it's the same liars who are protecting Israel's involvement in 9/11, the Holocaust, the World Wars, and other crimes. For example, the Canadian professor Michel Chalsudowski wrote a boring article a few days ago on March 18, 2009, about the U.S. government preparing for riots and building camps on U.S. military bases. And Alex Jones has been ranting and raving about the FEMA camps for years. Once you realize that those truth seekers are working with the Zionist crime network, you can make sense of their frightening scenarios, and it will explain the Nazi camps in World War II. Furthermore, once you understand what the Jews are trying to do with these camps, you'll realize that we have a potentially serious problem. Specifically, if our police and military don't wise up and realize that they're being manipulated by these criminal Jews, and if they don't get rid of the Zionists within their own organization, they could give us a repeat of the widespread arrests and killings that occurred in the communist nations and Germany. So I think it's very important for you to think carefully about these FEMA camps. It turns out that I actually talked about this issue briefly more than a year ago, but I had forgotten about it until a week or so ago. Somebody told me to listen to the latest audio by, I think it was Mike of prothink.org, but when I clicked on the link, the site was playing an audio file that I made with Daryl Smith on August 19, 2007. I had forgotten about that particular interview. At the time, Smith was still supporting my accusation that the Bolin family had been kidnapped, and so I was discussing the issue of how the police are tricked by the Zionist Jews into arresting honest citizens who oppose Zionism. This time I'll go into some more detail, and I'll point out how the Nazi camps relate to the FEMA camps. It might help you to understand the FEMA camps if you imagine yourself as a member of the Zionist crime gang. It's easy for you to control the majority of people, because they're as submissive and easily manipulated as circus animals. You can control most people with offers of money, sex, or fame, and you can easily manipulate them with threats, beatings, and murder. But there's a small percentage of the population who's going to refuse your bribes and who will not be intimidated or frightened by you. Somehow, you've got to suppress or eliminate that small minority who opposes your crime network. So, what would you do to convince the police to arrest the honest, respectable people who oppose you? And how would you convince the police to protect your gang members? Certainly, you would put as many of your gang members into the police force as possible, but you couldn't possibly dominate every police force in the nation. Somehow, you've got to convince the honest policemen to arrest honest citizens. But that's not easy. However, after listening to the so-called truth seekers, I've come to the conclusion that the technique these criminal Jews are using is to take advantage of the age-old desire to bring about better governments. If you look through history, you'll find that a small minority of the population has been complaining that the majority of people are like animals. For thousands of years, people have been wondering how to get better people into leadership positions and how to create better cities and a better economy and a better legal system. For thousands of years, people have been complaining that the majority of people are selfish, irresponsible, and obnoxious. I think the Jews have taken advantage of this desire to improve the world by fooling people into thinking that there's already a group of people working together to bring about a better world, and that other people should join this group and help create a new world order. And I think the Jews have fooled the Goyim into believing that this organization must remain extremely secretive on the grounds that the majority of people are such selfish and violent and stupid animals that they would have temper tantrums and riots if they knew what the organization was discussing and planning. However, the Jews don't tell their Goy members the truth about the organization. For example, the incredible level of secrecy is not to stop the public from learning about the organization. Rather, it's to prevent their Goy members from clearly seeing the organization and noticing that only the disgusting, dishonest, and selfish Jews are in positions of importance, and that their true goal is not to improve the world, but to conquer it. I think the American government and the Nazi government were tricked by these Jews into setting up prison camps for badly behaved people. The Jews gave valid reasons for building these camps, such as keeping criminals out of society and to deal with large-scale riots due to economic problems or racial fights. But the true goal of these Jews is to trick the police into arresting people that the Jews don't like, such as me and Christopher Bolin. It's easy to trick policemen and soldiers into arresting honest people because both the police and soldiers are taught to obey orders without question. Furthermore, the police routinely investigate people who turn out to be innocent. Therefore, the Jews could tell the police to arrest me on the grounds that I might be a criminal and that I need to be sent to a FEMA camp for a fair and honest investigation. The police would have no reason to suspect that they were being taken advantage of by the Jews. However, after we arrive at that isolated FEMA camp, the police would lose contact with us. The police wouldn't know what's going on at those FEMA camps, and nobody else would know either. The Jews would have us under their control. This explains the issue about the FEMA camps that didn't make any sense to me. Namely, if the government wants to torture and kill us, why would they bother transporting us to some isolated FEMA camp? Why not just torture and kill us in the city we live in? The reason that Jews can't have us killed in the same city we live in is because there are too many honest people in the police department. If the Jews told the police to arrest me, and if the Jews then tortured and killed me at the local police station, the police would arrest those Jews. The Jews have to do their tortures and killings in an isolated area. This requires that the Jews trick the police into thinking that we're being arrested for sensible reasons, and that we'll be treated fairly at the FEMA camp, and that we'll be released unharmed if we turn out to be innocent. The Jews have been preparing the police for this trick for many years. For example, the ADL and other Jewish groups have been conducting training sessions for the police for years. The Jews pretend to be teaching the police how to become better policemen, but in reality, they're trying to fool the police into thinking that there is such a thing as anti-Semitism, and that it's the duty of policemen to arrest anti-Semites. On my website, I have a scanned image of a business card from a Los Angeles County detective. On the back side of that card is a description of the core values of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. One of those core values is that the Sheriff's Department opposes anti-Semitism. The police are suckers. There's no such thing as anti-Semitism. And there's no such thing as an anti-Semite. The police are being fooled into thinking that there are millions of mysterious people scattered around the world who hate Jews simply because they have some inherent desire to hate Jews. In reality, the people who complain about Israel and criminal Jews have sensible reasons for doing so. The concept of sexism is also idiotic. There's no sexism. Men and women treat each other in a different manner, and the feminists complain that it's because men are evil and sexist, but it's simply because of human behavior. Both men and women have a natural tendency to treat the opposite sex in a different manner. Instead of accusing one another of being sexist, and instead of trying to force us to become unisex creatures, we should be trying to understand the differences between men and women, and we should adjust society to take into account these differences. The concept of racism is also idiotic. Each race has a natural tendency to prefer its own race and segregate from other races. This is not due to some evil or mysterious racism. This is simply human behavior, and we need to understand ourselves rather than accuse one another of being racists. The Jews are manipulating people into thinking that some of us are anti-Semites or racists or sexists, and they're trying to trick the police into arresting those of us who have these mysterious, evil qualities. This trick explains the irrational aspects of the Nazi concentration camps and the Holocaust, such as why the Nazis wasted their time transporting Jews to prison camps. The Jews claim that the Nazis began an extermination program during the final years of the war, but during those final years, Germany was suffering from severe shortages of food and other supplies. So why would the Nazis waste their precious resources transporting Jews to prison camps and then providing them with food and other supplies while the German people and military were suffering shortages of resources? Why didn't the Nazis simply kill the Jews in a quick, simple, and efficient manner? The Jews also complained that the Nazis were torturing them at the camps. But if the German people really wanted to torture Jews, why didn't they do the tortures all over Germany? Why were they torturing Jews only at isolated prison camps? And why only in the isolated sections of the prison camps? Why not torture the Jews in front of the other prisoners and the guards? Why were the Nazis hiding the torture if it was a standard Nazi policy? The nonsensical aspects of the Nazi camps and the Holocaust is evidence that the Jews were secretly manipulating the German police and military. I would also bet that the Zionist Jews were secretly working at the Nazi camps, and I would bet that it was the Jews, not the Germans, who were responsible for the idiotic tortures of prisoners. The reason I say that Jews were probably responsible for the tortures is because they seem to be the primary group of people doing tortures today. They seem to especially enjoy keeping people as prisoners. The Jews seem to be the primary group involved in the sex slave trade. And look at the communist movements in which enormous numbers of people were arrested and kept in prison for years and tortured. Alexander Solzhenitsyn has written books about this. And don't forget the accusations from some Americans that the American military was frequently set up in both Korea and Vietnam to be captured so that they could be taken to prison camps for experiments and torture. Also, you should spend some time considering what Christopher Bolin and his family are going through right now. Let me tell you some of the latest things that have been going on in regards to that family. First of all, on January 3rd, 2009, I received an email message from a woman in Japan. She asked me to remove her name and email address from an article I wrote about Bolin meeting the Italian 9/11 researcher and journalist Giuletto Chielsa, whatever his name is. In that article, I posted an email message that I received from Bolin, and Bolin had included a message that he had received from a woman in Japan. I replaced her last name and part of her email address with asterisks, and I assumed that she wouldn't care that I posted her message. But she's worried that people will be able to identify her. So I sent a reply to her. I reassured her that if she's an honest person, she has nothing to worry about. But if she's working with the criminals, I suggested to her that she go to the Japanese police and tell them what she knows about the criminals, and that she should help us expose this crime network. She responded that I should have contacted her before I posted her email message, and I should have asked her for permission. I replied that I think everybody who is currently in contact with Christopher Bolin is working with the criminal Jews, and I assumed that she was just another criminal. And I pointed out that I wasn't even certain if she was really Japanese or just another criminal Jew. She then responds by telling me about her blog, and it turns out that I had seen her blog before because Jews who were pretending to be truth seekers were promoting it several months earlier. Most of her blog is in Japanese, but she has some English articles and remarks mixed in. For example, she has a paragraph from Henry Macau that starts off with the sentence, quote, "To understand the world, you must understand that it is controlled by a satanic cult, the Illuminati, Jewish finance, and a European-American aristocracy joined by marriage, money, and Freemasonry," unquote. She also promotes Christopher John Bjerknes, and she has a link to the English version of the Protocols of Zion that goes to Daryl Smith's website. She also has links to globalresearch.ca, which is the site for Professor Michel Chosedowski. And she has a link to the Vatican Assassins website, in which we're told that the Vatican is in control of the world. I didn't bother looking through all of her entries, but what I did see was Zionist propaganda. It's also interesting that in her email message to me, she wrote this short sentence, quote, "So my aim is not to eliminate the Jews," end quote. Okay, so what is her aim? Unfortunately, she doesn't bother to tell me what her true goal is, but following that sentence, she tells me that Michael Piper, who works for the American Free Press, has an important article, and she provides a link to it. And following that link, she provides me with a link to a page that has all of Piper's audio files that he created in 2007 for the Republic Broadcasting Network. Anyway, I told her that since she has a website, why is she worried about people knowing her name or email address? After another email message between us, she sent me her final email on January 6, 2009, and she starts off with the sentence, quote, "P.S. I'll explain how I feel at the end," end quote. She then once again scolds me for using her name and email address without contacting her first, and she ends her email with how she feels. She writes, quote, "I have not been able to get to work since you wrote me. I've been feeling down, so this is my last letter to you," end quote. Apparently, she's another of the millions of unhappy people. This would fit into what I've been saying for years, namely that the Zionist crime network is recruiting people who are mentally ill. The criminal Jews seem to dominate certain types of activities, such as gambling, prostitution, drug dealing, psychology, sex slavery, Hollywood, and all sorts of sexual groups, such as homosexual bathhouses, pedophile organizations, S&M businesses, and sex toys. I think these criminal Jews are using their customer lists to recruit people for their army. Years ago, I believed the propaganda that these criminal Jews were successful because they truly are more intelligent than the rest of us. But I've come to the conclusion that this Zionist network is primarily a group of freaks, parasites, weirdos, retards, and losers. Today, I think their success is the result of their crude, animal-like personality. They remind me of hyenas. They look for people who have something they want, and then they get together in a pack and try to take it from him. They also exploit the ordinary person's craving for money, fame, and sex, and they'll do anything to get what they want, such as lie, cheat, intimidate, bribe, and even marry a person. They're not people who contribute to society. Rather, they take what other people have. They're the plagiarists, parasites, thieves, murderers, and liars. They see people as opportunities, not as people. They see the world as a business venture, not as a beautiful place to enjoy. I would describe their personalities as being like animals or primitive savages. And this explains why the Zionist network has to remain so incredibly secretive. They have to be secretive because if we were to get to know them, we would be disgusted, not impressed. This network of freaks could never take over the world if we knew how they lived and how they treated people. For thousands of years, people have been openly discussing the problems of society and how to make a better world. But these Jews can't discuss their plans on improving the world because they don't have any plans to improve it. The only plans they make is how to deceive and manipulate and bribe and instigate wars. And they try to stifle attempts by us to discuss the world's problems because they don't want us getting together to improve the world. They don't want us talking about the world's problems on television or in newspapers or in magazines. They want us to be under their control. They want us to feel helpless and look to them for guidance. I've met a lot of people in this so-called 9/11 truth movement, and I've been amazed at how many of them are what I would call losers. And a lot of them are unhappy and easily depressed, like that Japanese woman. As I've explained in documents at my philosophy page, all of us can be unhappy or angry or depressed for brief periods of time. But when people are perpetually unhappy or angry, it's due to a mental or physical disorder. People with bizarre emotional states assume that they can solve their problem by becoming rich or famous, or by engaging in some strange sport or sexual activity. But there's nothing they can do to solve their problem because their misery is coming from within them. If their mental problem is due to blood chemistry getting out of control, they might be able to improve it simply by altering their diet. But if their problem is due to a defective brain or body, there's possibly nothing they can do to relieve their misery other than commit suicide. Anyway, getting back to that Japanese woman, when I received her final email and realized that she was one of those unhappy people, I sent her my final response by pointing out to her that the Jews look for people who are unhappy. I warned her that their offers of money, sex, and fame will not help her. And I told her that she has a great opportunity to help us expose this Jewish crime network because she's in contact with some of the criminal Jews. She can identify some of them. I encouraged her to gather information about them and tell the Japanese police about them. I doubt if she will, but it was worth a try. I'm constantly getting email messages and phone calls from weird people in this Zionist crime network. On January 9th, 2009, a couple days after that Japanese woman sent me her final email message, I received an email message from Anders Björkman, that mysterious Swedish man who I mentioned more than a year ago and accused of being yet another Zionist agent who was somehow involved with the kidnapping of the Bolin family. In his brief email message to me, he writes, quote, "Chris is fine and not hiding at all, as far as I'm concerned. Met him and his wife Helia during my MS Estonia Truth Tour in November 2008. At the end of my Tallinn presentation, we went to listen to Chelsea's Zero presentation in Russian at the best bookstore in Estonia. I know Chris since many years. They also came to visit me at Freiburg, Saxony, in August on vacation. So do not worry. Update/correct your website accordingly. End quote. I get the feeling that Bjorkman is a blackmail victim, not a Zionist Jew, and I have the feeling that he was told to send that message to me in an attempt to convince me that the Bolins are fine. Ever since the Bolins disappeared in June 2007, I've been under pressure by lots of people to stop making the accusation that they've been kidnapped. But that's what the evidence shows me. If I'm wrong, why doesn't someone show me where I'm making my mistake? Why do they tell me to shut up about it? This is the same treatment I get when I talk about 9/11, the Holocaust, and the Apollo moon landing. Nobody ever tells me where I'm making my mistakes in my accusations that the Holocaust is a Zionist fraud or that the Apollo moon landing was staged here on the earth. They can't point out my mistakes because there aren't any mistakes. They can't point out flaws in my logic because there aren't any flaws. The only thing they can do is try to manipulate me into remaining silent, and they try to avoid giving me publicity so that my opinions don't reach too many more people. If my opinions were full of mistakes, the Jews could easily ruin me simply by giving me some publicity on television and then telling me to explain my opinions to the world. After I finished explaining my opinions, they would point out my mistakes and my logic and show the world that I'm a fool. But they're afraid to put me on television because they know they can't show any mistakes in my logic. There's another very interesting aspect to the disappearance of the Bolin family, and that is, why are the Jews spending so much time trying to convince me that the Bolins are safe? Most of the world's population doesn't even know who I am, and most of them wouldn't look at my website if you told them to. So why do the Jews care so much about what I say about the Bolins? I think one reason is that a lot of normal people have been tricked by the Zionists into joining a worldwide organization to bring about a new world order. There are probably a lot of respectable people who are busy with their jobs and their life, and they aren't paying much attention to the issue of Zionism or Israel. They were tricked into thinking that they were working with a group of respectable people to make a better world. And if they were to realize that Christopher Bolin had been kidnapped, they would start wondering, what kind of organization have I gotten involved with? It's possible that there are even some policemen in Chicago who would be horrified to think that they were tricked into assisting with that kidnapping. The kidnapping of the Bolin family makes the people in the Zionist network appear to be at the mental level of Joseph Fritzl and other lunatics who keep people as prisoners in their basements. Before I continue, it might help if I repeat a concept that I've mentioned in other files just to make sure you're aware of it. When I criticize people like Joseph Fritzl, some of you may think to yourself that you're as bad as Fritzl because you've had fantasies of keeping Queen Elizabeth or Barbara Bush as a sex slave in your basement. You have to keep in mind that all humans have the same qualities. Even though we're genetically unique, there's not that much of a difference between us. We're not different species. We all have selfish, irrational, animal-like qualities. When we're angry, all sorts of violent and disgusting fantasies pass through our minds. Unless you're retarded, you've been angry at least a few times during your life. As a result, all of us have had crazy fantasies about hurting people. But there's a very significant difference between having a fantasy of torturing somebody and actually spending the money and doing the work necessary to set up a prison in your house and then keep people in that prison. And for those of you who are men, consider all the times that, especially when you were young, that you had fantasies of touching some of the pretty girls that you encountered. And compare that to the men who actually grab at women in crowded trains. And compare those men to the men who go one step further and rape the women. The point I want to make is that you shouldn't reprimand yourself simply because some crazy fantasy passes through your mind. You have to look at what you actually do in real life. All of us have had wild fantasies, but how many of us are actually kidnapping people and keeping them as prisoners in our house? How many of us are actually traveling to the orphanages to rape the children? How many of us are actually grabbing at the women on the train? This concept leads to an important issue. When we find a person who has trouble controlling his emotions and actually does these things, should we assume that he can be fixed so that he becomes like the rest of us? I don't think so. It's possible that some people can be trained to control themselves a little bit better, but the reason they did these things in the first place is because they have less control over their emotions than the rest of us. In other words, when we find a person that has actually built a prison in his basement and has kept people in it, we should assume that he has done similar things in the past or that he'll continue to do similar things in the future. We should not assume that he's just like us and that he can be cured through some simple technique such as prison or making him read the Bible. When we find a man who grabs women on the train, we shouldn't assume that he can be cured. I think we should assume that he simply doesn't have the same level of control over his emotions as the rest of us. Consider how this concept applies to the policemen in California who were killed yesterday. After the first two policemen were killed, all of the other policemen should have assumed that since he already killed some policemen, he's likely to kill more. And the police should consider how this concept applies to the criminals within the police departments. Once they discover that a policeman is protecting the Jewish crime network or some other organized crime gang, they should assume that he's going to protect it again. They shouldn't ignore the police who work with organized crime networks. And consider how this concept applies to the kidnapping of the Bolin family. Do you think this is the very first time that Zionists have kidnapped people? And do you think it'll be the last time they kidnap people? I think we should assume that they've been kidnapping people for a long time and that they're going to continue kidnapping people. Not surprisingly, if you look through history, you'll find lots of accusations from the communist nations that people were secretly and quietly arrested and put into prison for decades, even though they didn't commit any crime other than complain about communism. And there are accusations from some men in the U.S. military that they were set up time after time in Korea and Vietnam to be captured and sent to prison. The evidence suggests that the Zionist crime network has attracted the most disgusting people the human race has ever created, which explains why they require so much secrecy. These freaks are constantly contacting me by email and sometimes by phone calls. In fact, a few days ago, I got a phone call from a person in Sweden who calls himself Joe Blow, and also on the phone was his friend in England who was using the nickname Maggot. Joe Blow has a website that offers videos and audio files through BitTorrent, and he said he wanted to interview me. But he didn't want a serious interview. He was more interested in encouraging me to make insulting remarks about the personal life of Alex Jones and other people in the so-called truth movement. I suppose he was hoping I would make some idiotic remarks that he could use to make me appear as a neurotic, jealous, and gossipy person. When I asked them for their real names, they wouldn't tell me. They said they were friends with a man who calls himself Noel, who is currently the webmaster for Daryl Smith, but they wouldn't tell me what Noel's last name is either. The secrecy among these people should be considered as a warning sign. They claim to be hiding from the Mossad or from the Illuminati, but in reality, they're hiding from you and me. And I also think they're hiding from the people who have been tricked into supporting the concept of a new world order. The Zionist network is an organization of selfish and disgusting freaks. They're not respectable people who can openly discuss their opinions in public. They have to hide from us and try to manipulate government officials, policemen, school officials, and military officials. Fortunately, judging by the recent remarks of Alex Jones, Daryl Smith, and others, I think that so many millions of people have figured out that these Jews have been tricking them that the Jews are now seriously worried that they're going to lose this battle. The Jews are now spending a lot of time complaining about both the police and military. I think they're starting to worry that those FEMA camps will either remain empty or that the police will use them to hold Jews and other people when they start destroying the Zionist crime network. For example, as I mentioned in my document about the $500 billion electronic bank run, Alex Jones, Daryl Smith, and many other people are trying desperately to convince us that the Posse Comitatus law prohibits the use of military personnel in crime prevention. I think the reason the Jews are so concerned is because they were hoping to use the military against people like me. But now they're worried the military may be used to stop the criminal Jews. After I posted that article, Smith was interviewed once again by that mysterious man named Noel. The interview was on February 25th, 2009, and Smith once again brought up the issue of Posse Comitatus, and this time he sounded even more worried. Listen to this.
I'm going to say something very controversial here, Noel. Any military of any type, from any country, in any kind, that launches itself on the streets of America with any kind of weaponry in their possession, hands, or access to, should be shot dead on the spot. I mean, I'm talking about immediately the public of the United States should turn their guns on these people and shoot them dead. I don't care who they are, what country they're from, or who they represent. I'm saying to the American public that any military force that organizes itself on the streets of America should be shot and killed in on sight. And I put that on my website, and I mean that, because it is against the law and against the Constitution of the United States for any military force to be moving freely on the soil of the United States by Posse Comitatus. And anybody who resists that idea needs to be shot as well.
I think it's important that you think seriously about what Smith said, because I hear the same message from others in this so-called truth movement. I think it's important that you understand what the Jews are trying to do. First of all, Smith said that we should kill every military man who is posted in our cities, regardless of who he is or why he's in our cities. We should show no concern and no sympathy. We should not think about the issue or discuss it. We should simply kill. No questions asked. No concern for who the man is. And, in addition to killing people in the military, Smith says that even civilians who support the use of the military in our cities should be killed. However, in that same interview, Smith tries to convince us that we should not indiscriminately accuse Jews of being part of the Zionist crime network. Instead, he wants us to believe that most Jews are innocent victims of a few dishonest Zionists who tricked them into supporting Israel. As proof that most Jews are innocent, he once again mentions that mysterious Jewish woman who provided him with food when he decided to go back to school as an adult to get a college degree. Listen to this.
Somebody who fed me when I was at NYU, and this person was a kind-hearted, wonderful human being, and she would give me salads and food and sandwiches to go to school and never asked me for anything in return, Noel. She was honestly a kind and loving human, and it's one of the bases that I've used for saying that not all Jews are bad. Mm-hmm. But I did speak to her recently, and I asked her some specific questions about Zionism. And she sadly believes much of the propaganda she's been sold.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what my point are.
That's and that's why I'm bringing it up. Because the fact is, she doesn't know the fact. She does not have a full grasp of the truth. And so, here's a good-hearted human who would help any sick dog in the road or any troubled human anywhere, and still she supports Israel because she doesn't know any better.
Yep.
So my point is to you, can we not introduce the facts to these people in a way where we're not controversial? Now, this is where we have a challenge, Noel. If we approach this community as an adversary, they will not listen to us. And I've always tried to say, look, these are the greatest lied to groups of the world, not necessarily just the Christians, but as a group. If we say that they are all bad and that they are all needing of elimination and so forth, what we're going to find is that we are killing people who have no clue about why they're going to die. I can't in my conscience, allow that to happen. And these are people who are only guilty of ignorance.
Smith claims this woman is sweet and wonderful, but he won't identify her. Her name is something like Ilana, and even though Smith claims that she's completely innocent, he won't tell us anything about her or the jewelry business of her family. Instead, we're supposed to mindlessly trust Smith into believing that this mysterious, wealthy Jewish woman continues to support Zionism because she's a helpless victim of Zionist propaganda. And we're supposed to believe that most of the other Jews in the world are also victims of a few of these bad Zionists. It's also important to notice that Smith brings up the issue of Christians who have been fooled by the Zionists into supporting Israel. Smith wants us to believe that because Christians have been fooled by Zionist propaganda, we should assume that most Jews are also innocent victims of this Zionist propaganda. Then, a few days ago, on March 15, 2009, Smith's webmaster, Noel, created an audio file in which he also once again emphasized that we should be careful about accusing Jews. It's difficult to understand the beginning of his audio excerpt because he was playing another audio and then interrupted it to make this important remark, but you can understand what he's saying. Listen to this.
How about, you know, all these people want to round up all the Jews, which I battle against. How about rounding up just the criminals?
Noel seems to be making a very sensible statement, namely that we should arrest only criminals, not honest people. However, what he and the other Jews don't want us to realize is that we don't know who the criminals are. The only way we can determine who the criminals are is to investigate everybody. The Jews are trying to fool us into thinking that they've already figured out who's responsible for 9/11, the world wars, and other crimes, and that we can eliminate this crime network simply by arresting those particular criminals, such as the Rockefeller family, George Bush, Queen Elizabeth, and a few other people. If the police and military fall for this trick, they'll arrest a few people, mostly very old people, and the majority of the Jewish crime network will remain in control of the media, government, schools, and everything else. I think it's very important for you to understand this trick, and if you know any people in the police or military, try to educate them about it. I hear variations of this message from Alex Jones and a lot of other people, and I suspect that more Jews will be promoting this trick as more people learn about Zionism. The trick is very simple to understand. They want us to indiscriminately kill both civilians and soldiers who stand up to the Jewish crime network, but we should be very careful about accusing Jews of being criminals because most Jews are actually innocent victims of Zionists, and we should go out of our way to protect those innocent Jews. There are two sisters who have a radio show on the Voice of Reason network. They call themselves the Patriot Dames. They want me to be a guest on their show for April 9, 2009. So I listened to a couple of their previous shows. In March of 2009, they interviewed Henry Macau. Just like Daryl Smith, Macau wants us to believe that most Jews are innocent victims and that we should be careful about accusing Jews of being criminals. He's just one more of many of these people encouraging us to protect the innocent Jews. My opinion is that none of us owe anything to any Jew. It's not our responsibility to take care of Jews. If there are any innocent Jews in this world, it's up to them to take care of themselves, and I would say they also have a duty as a human to help us get rid of this Jewish crime network. If the innocent Jews refused to help us remove this crime network, then I wouldn't consider them innocent. I would consider them as passive criminals. You should also realize that Henry Macau, Professor Chalcedosky, Daryl Smith, Alex Jones, and all of the others show absolutely no concern about the mysterious disappearance of the Bolin family. They want us to take care of Jews, but they won't even investigate what happens when one of us disappears mysteriously. Since they don't care about the Bolin family, what makes you think they would care about me or you? And since they don't care about the Bolin family, why should we care about them? And they also show no concern about the mysterious deaths and disappearances in our police force or in our military or anywhere else. They want us to go out of our way to protect Jews, but they won't do anything to take care of any of us. It should be obvious that these so-called truth seekers and investigators are actually members of the Jewish crime network. Furthermore, they're trying to get control of the police and military and government and push aside people like me so that they have total control over the decisions of which Jews are innocent and which are guilty. They already got rid of Christopher Bolin, and their method of pushing me aside is to create websites that condemn Israel and Zionism. They're creating websites that have material that's similar to mine in the hope that they can lure you away from me and over to their websites. Whenever I complain that the other truth seekers are ignoring me, the Jews respond that I'm jealous. So perhaps it will help if you listen to this excerpt of Daryl Smith during a radio show that he did March 3rd, 2009.
But one by one, we are going to take these people out of our lives. And I'm going to be there to lead that fight, no matter what it takes.
How much more obvious can it get? Smith is determined to be the leader in this fight against the Zionists, and he's willing to do anything to be that leader. He claims to be an honest person who wants to help us get rid of Zionism, but in reality, he and his Jewish friends simply want to be in control of the fight so that they can determine which Jews are innocent and which are guilty. Smith is determined to be our leader. This explains why he spent years trying to become my friend. He used me in order to give himself publicity, and now he's trying to promote himself as the leader in the fight against Zionism. However, Smith has a lot of competition. There are lots of Jews in the Patriot groups, 9/11 groups, anti-war groups, and white supremacist groups who are struggling to be leader in this fight. All of these Zionists are hoping that we are such mindless and submissive imbeciles that we follow them without questioning who they are or what their true goal is. The sites created by the white supremacists are so full of insults and criticism of Jews that they make me look like a supporter of Zionism. To somebody who doesn't understand what's happening, it appears as if those white supremacists are honest people who are disgusted and angry with the Jewish criminals. But once you understand the wolf in sheep's clothing trick, you should be able to figure out that they're Zionist Jews. For example, if you listen to that interview with Henry Macau and the Patriot Dames, you'll hear a woman named Wendy Campbell call into the show and talk for a long time. She talks frequently on this radio show. She is in frequent contact with the Patriot Dames, and she frequently calls their show in order to complain about Jews and Zionism. If you were to listen to her complaints about Jews, you would assume that she's one of the few Americans who's struggling to expose and stop this crime network. But if you look at her website, you should be able to figure out that she's just another phony. As of March 2009, Wikipedia even allows her to have an entry, even though they refer to her as a Holocaust denier and an anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist. At the top of her Wikipedia entry is a remark that Wikipedia is considering the removal of the article about her. She can use that remark to boast that Wikipedia is trying to censor her, and therefore she must be an honest person that we can trust. If Wikipedia goes one step further and actually removes her entry, then she can boast that she has been censored by Wikipedia. However, this is just another trick that Zionists use. They claim to be victims in order to get sympathy from us and in order to fool us into proving that they must be honest people. If Wikipedia does censor Wendy Campbell, it's not because she's honest. Rather, it's because they worry that in her attempt to lure people to her website, she's exposing too much information about the Holocaust fraud. The Jews are in a very serious dilemma. In order to attract people away from my site and over to their sites, they've got to release a lot of useful information about Zionist crimes. But when they release information about themselves, they hurt themselves. It's like playing with fire. They have to be careful or they're going to get burned. Hopefully, I have enough information on my website about the issue of deception for you to figure out that Wendy Campbell is a phony. All you have to do is look at her website and notice who she promotes and who she ignores. For example, she has a page where she sells some DVDs, and on that page she promotes the free DVD that Jimmy Walter was giving away. On that particular DVD is an edited version of my video about 9/11. Jimmy Walter was impressed with my video and wanted to include it on his DVD that he was giving out for free, but the Jews tricked him into making an edited version of my video. The parts of my video that were removed were the parts that criticized the media and the FBI, and the part in which I discussed the issue of deception. Wendy Campbell and other people in the so-called truth movement will promote all sorts of DVDs and websites, and many of them are willing to promote the edited version of my video, and many of them will also promote obvious propaganda, such as chemtrails and UFOs, but they won't promote me or my website. Don't be fooled into thinking that I'm jealous. I've simply noticed an obvious pattern. All of these so-called truth seekers are promoting only the people within their network. By the way, Jimmy Walter is still hiding somewhere in Europe. I think the Jews have control over him also, but I don't think that he's a prisoner. Instead, I think the Jews are just keeping him on drugs or alcohol, and they're probably living off his money. Anyway, for quite a while, I've considered Wendy Campbell to be another wolf in sheep's clothing, and listening to that interview simply reinforced my opinion about her. I think the reason she spends so much time calling the radio shows is to promote propaganda. For example, when the host of the radio show mentioned that she started watching a video about 9/11, Wendy Campbell immediately began promoting the video by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth and the video from Sophia called 9/11 Mysteries. Wendy Campbell reminds me of the Jews that I met in the so-called truth movement who follow us around everywhere. These wolves in sheep's clothing struggle to become our friends. Their true goals are to observe us and manipulate us. They want to know who we talk to and what we know and if we have any medical problems, or if we have any interest in drugs or homosexuality or becoming famous. They're looking for something to exploit. They're looking for a weakness. If you need money, they might offer it to you. And if you need help with something else, they might offer to help. If you're angry with Israel, they'll make angry remarks also. They'll tell you what you want to hear, and they'll give you praise and compliments. They'll disagree with you only if they worry that you'll become suspicious of them if they agree too often. Most people are suckers for praise, and most people assume that if somebody has similar opinions, then he must be brilliant because he has the correct opinions. Our natural tendency is to assume that a person who disagrees with us is stupid or ignorant. Our natural tendency is dangerous. We have a tendency to trust anybody who has similar opinions. This makes it very easy for criminals to manipulate us with praise. If you don't take this issue seriously, you could end up like Christopher Bolin and his family. The people in this Zionist movement are not the nice people they appear to be, and they're not playing games. This network has some of the most disgusting people we've ever seen. And listen to Smith's remark.
And I'm going to be there to lead that fight, no matter what it takes.
These freaks are determined to get control of us, and they're going to do whatever it takes. A few days ago, on March 18, 2009, Christopher Bolin sent an email message to a group of us. His message consisted of nothing more than some complaints, followed by part of his website. One of his complaints was that during the past 6 months, he spent $10,000 of his own money to support himself while he writes articles, and that he's not receiving many donations from us. He complains that I played a big role in reducing his donations and that I'm spreading disinformation about him and his family. Consider the significance of this situation. The Bolin family has been missing since June of 2007, and neither Christopher nor his wife have shown any desire to get a job. They're not asking us for help in finding jobs, and they're not offering to do work for any of us. Instead, they beg for money. How many more years are the Bolins going to beg for money? They have a son who is, or will soon be, a teenager, and a few years later their daughter will be a teenager. Are their children going to beg for money also? They expect us to give them money, even though they won't tell us where they live or even which continent they live on. And they won't allow any of us to talk to them on the telephone or visit with them. The only people who have had personal contact with the Bolin family since June of 2007 are people I consider to be part of the Zionist crime network, such as that Italian journalist and that mysterious Swedish man. Furthermore, as far as I know, the Bolins didn't have $10,000 when they left America. They stayed at my house twice, and they didn't have much money at that time. And then when he got involved in that crazy court case, he didn't have enough money for a lawyer and had to ask for donations. They didn't even have an automobile. In June 2007, when he was getting ready to leave America, he called me and told me that he needed money, so I sent him $1,000 through PayPal. It would be interesting to find out who he gave that money to, because I'm sure they were working for the kidnappers. Since Bolin needed money to get out of the country, and since he's also complaining that donations are small and infrequent, how did he spend $10,000 of his own money? I think the kidnappers spent $10,000 of their own money, and I think they're getting tired of paying for their food and other supplies. This brings up a very important issue. Didn't his kidnappers realize that they would have to spend money to keep the family alive? In case you don't remember what happened after the Bolins disappeared, I'll refresh your memory. Most of the so-called truth seekers, such as Alex Jones, completely ignored the Bolins, and many other people said that the Bolins were simply hiding in a foreign nation. Eventually, Daryl Smith started criticizing Christopher as an alcoholic Nazi, and he claimed that both Christopher and his wife were unfit parents and mentally unstable. So here's my current theory about what has been going on. I think that after they kidnapped the Bolin family, they told people like Alex Jones to completely avoid the issue of the Bolins, and they told other people, such as Daryl Smith, to ruin Bolin's reputation. I think they were trying to cause us to forget about the Bolins or turn away from them in disgust. If the Jews had succeeded, then the kidnappers would have killed Christopher and his wife and sold the children as sex slaves, and that would have brought them a profit. I think that I messed up their plans by making the accusation that the Bolins have been kidnapped. This forced the kidnappers to spend a lot of their time and money keeping the family alive and staging such events as that meeting at the bookstore with the Italian journalist. They're trying to fool us into thinking the Bolin family is alive and safe. And this would also explain why I've been getting so much pressure by so many people to stop claiming that the Bolins are kidnapped. And this would explain why Christopher sent that bitter email message about having to spend $10,000 of his own money to keep his family alive. This was not Christopher complaining. This was his kidnappers. I don't know how anybody can look at the Bolin situation and not come to the conclusion that the entire family are prisoners. And once you realize that the Bolin family are prisoners, you have to wonder who else has been kidnapped. For example, Carol Valentine, who has the websites publicaction.com and comeinhere.com, seems to have disappeared sometime around 2003. But when I was working with Daryl Smith, Jim Condit Jr. reassured us that she was fine. He said he talks to her once in a while on the telephone, but he wouldn't give us her phone number or let anybody else talk to her. Condit has several websites, such as votefraud.org and realnews247.com. I'm not surprised that he associates with and promotes all sorts of people I consider to be Zionist agents. And take a look at that website, JewWatch.com. That site was created by a man named Frank Weltner, and I had the feeling that he was either a blackmail victim or a prisoner. Recently, he vanished, and his site now has a new owner. I suspect that the Jews killed Weltner. It's incredible to think that the Zionist Jews may have kidnapped and killed thousands of people around the world, and it's shocking that the Jews can find thousands of other people, such as Jim Condit Jr., who are willing to convince us that these missing people are doing fine. Incidentally, I think one of the reasons Google is putting so much time into creating maps of our cities with images from satellites, airplanes, and trucks is so that they can use these maps to plan kidnappings and assassinations. When Israel was bombing Lebanon in 2006, they were using three-dimensional computerized maps of the Lebanese cities to plan their bombings. The size of this Jewish crime network is staggering. As I look back at all the people I've known in the so-called truth movement who have tried to become my friends, I've come to the conclusion that almost every one of them was working with this crime network. And I've even decided that virtually all of the women who have tried to become my friend or help me expose 9/11 were actually trying to set me up or get information about me. Years ago, I trusted a lot of those people. I traveled to some of their meetings, and I even went into some of their homes. They had a lot of opportunities to arrange for my accidental death. However, they had confidence in those days that they would win. During those days, they didn't worry about me. In fact, there was a time when Alex Jones was selling my book in video, and for a while, the American Free Press was also selling my book. But during the past few years, the Jews seem to have realized that they're losing this battle. They're now afraid to give me publicity. Also, there have been some strange deaths during the past few years. For example, I think they killed Dan Wallace, the son of that firefighter who died during 9/11. I think Dan Wallace is another example of a person who made a mistake about who to trust. And a college student named Michael Zieber was also killed in a very suspicious manner, although it's hard to understand why he was killed. I have information about both of their mysterious deaths on my website if you're interested. I've been amazed over and over to discover that another person I trusted is working with the Zionist crime network. Most of the people who work for this network appear as ordinary people. Most of them do not seem violent or murderous. Most of them simply gather information about us and spread Zionist propaganda. In fact, I recently came to the conclusion that a man who has been helping me sell my book and video for the past few years is another of these Zionist criminals. His name is John Leonard, and he has a tiny publishing business called Progressive Press. He publishes only a few books, such as those from Webster Tarpley. Another interesting aspect of this Zionist movement is what the media refers to as sleeper cells. According to the media, the Arabs have scattered terrorists throughout the world, but they're not committing any crimes. Instead, they're living among us like ordinary people. The media refers to them as sleeper cells and implies that they're simply waiting for the signal to commit some terrorist act. I used to dismiss this issue of sleeper cells because I didn't believe that Arabs were attacking us, but there are some remarks that Daryl Smith made to me while I was working with him that didn't have any meaning to me at the time, but today I think his remarks can explain the concept of the sleeper cell. Smith spent years trying to become my friend, and during that time, we had a lot of conversations. He told me the story about how he met and married his current wife. I think it was during the 1990s when he met her. He told her that he was going to lead the world in a rebellion against the government. She didn't think much of that remark, and Smith said he didn't know why he felt that way, but he just felt that it was his destiny to lead the world in a rebellion against our dishonest government. I suppose women would find a remark like that to be rather strange, but I didn't think anything strange about it because all men and all male animals have cravings to be leader. So I assumed that Smith's fantasy was to be the leader of a movement to overthrow our corrupt government. However, after years of watching Smith and other people in the so-called truth movement, I think Smith is one of those people they refer to as a sleeper cell. Smith met a very wealthy Jewish family that works in the gold and jewelry business. As you heard in that excerpt that I played for you, Smith claims that the wealthy Jewish woman would give him food simply because she's a wonderful woman, but I think he was doing work for her. And I suppose the work was illegal, which is why he won't explain what it was. Anyway, that Jewish family may have noticed that Smith has some very useful qualities. I suppose Smith's best quality, from the point of view of the Jews, is that he's very good at manipulating people. The majority of people are extremely weak emotionally, and they won't stand up to somebody like Smith. Smith has that aggressive, intimidating personality that is useful for a leader during a riot or a revolution. Smith can also give long talks without a prepared speech or any type of notes. This is a necessary quality for somebody who's going to organize people during a revolution or a riot, because there won't be time for speech writers to plan and prepare speeches. Furthermore, Smith has a background that is so horrible that he wouldn't tell me much about it, but he did admit to me that he was a very bad person. This allows him to be easily blackmailed. The Jews may have noticed that Smith would be useful to them when they're ready to stage a civil war or a revolution and take total control of the U.S. government. They may have told Smith that a group of people were planning to overthrow the government and that they wanted him to be one of the leaders of the revolution. And they told Smith that they're not ready yet, so he just has to wait. This would explain where Smith got that crazy idea that he was going to lead us in a revolution against the government. Smith told me that he has no idea where that idea came from, but I'm sure he knows where it came from. And I suppose the name of his website, namely, I Am the Witness, also has some meaning to him, but he told me he has no idea how he came up with that name. He makes it appear as if these ideas just pop into his mind. The other strange aspect of the relationship between Smith and that wealthy Jewish family is that they have been keeping in contact with Smith ever since he first met them. As you heard in that excerpt that I played, Smith is still in contact with her. But does she really like Smith? Are they really friends? If so, why doesn't she help him financially? Why is Smith begging for money? Smith claims that she gave him food in college, so why doesn't she send him some money for food today? I think the reason she doesn't want to give him money is because she's not truly his friend. I think she regards Smith as nothing more than a pawn in their game. I think Smith is what they refer to as a sleeper agent. In one of my other audio files, I brought up the question of how people like Alex Jones can spend hours a day on the radio lying to us without ever messing up the lies. Lying is not easy. How can these people lie on a routine basis without occasionally making a mistake? I think what the Jews are doing, as I mentioned before, is that they're telling us the truth, but they make slight changes to it. For example, when they talk about sleeper cells, they're not lying to us. There really are sleeper cells, but they consist of Jews and blackmailed freaks. Lying in this manner is very easy because you don't have to remember what the lie is. All you do is tell the truth, except that you replace the word Jew with Arab or Nazi or CIA or military industrial establishment. For example, when Alex Jones tells us that the New World Order has been building special railroad cars to transport us to FEMA camps, he seems to be telling us the truth, except that he makes sure he never says the word Jew. I used to be amazed at his ability to lie, but once you realize that all he's doing is replacing the word Jew, you can see that he really doesn't have much talent at all. He's just another loser in the Zionist network. Even a child is capable of lying in this manner. The more I learn about these Jews, the less impressed I am by them. They're like the Wizard of Oz. They're impressive only when you don't understand their tricks. Another interesting aspect to this Zionist movement is the number of Jews who are promoting Zionist propaganda, but who don't seem to have any connection to Israel or Zionism. A good example is that man named Fred, who has been calling me almost every day for the past couple of years. I mentioned him briefly in one of my other audio files. He's what most people would call a loser. He told me that he lived with his mother until late in life. I forget if it was his 30s or 40s when he finally left home. He's had a few odd jobs during his life, but during the 1990s he was living in his van with his wife because they couldn't afford an apartment. They had one son, but the government took him away on the grounds that they're unfit parents. He first started calling me in 2004. At that time he would call only once every few months. But by about 2006 his marriage was starting to fail, and so he started calling more often, and it seemed to me as if he was trying to set me up to get involved with a fight with his wife's boyfriend. His tricks never worked, and eventually his wife left him, and he ended up homeless again and living in his van. He now survives by traveling to synagogues and occasionally churches and asking for donations. He tends to get $20 to $40 a day in donations, and it's tax-free cash. By the way, this brings up a possibly important issue. Fred complains frequently that when he goes to the synagogues for donations, he's just one of many people looking for donations. He says that most of the people are Israeli citizens who have identification cards, and that the rabbis give those Israelis special treatment and a lot more money. This makes me wonder if some of those Israelis are Mossad agents who are traveling around America in an almost invisible manner. By collecting cash as they travel, they don't need money when they enter the nation, and they can travel around without leaving banking transactions that could identify them. Getting back to Fred, most Jews in the world would consider Fred to be a loser. The strange aspect of Fred that I wanted to bring to your attention is that even though he's a loser, he promotes Zionist propaganda. For example, he blames the world's problems on a mysterious group of people who he refers to as the traitors. He also promotes the theory that the traitors have incredible control over the weather. He tries over and over to convince me that they can create hurricanes and steer the hurricanes, and they can create droughts and tornadoes. And he promotes the theory that the traitors are spraying us with mysterious chemtrails. When O.J. Simpson was in the news a while ago, he spent many days over many months trying to convince me that O.J. Simpson was solely responsible for the murder of his ex-wife, Nicole. He would become very upset when I pointed out that there's evidence on the Internet that Simpson was involved with Jewish crime gangs and that they were responsible or involved in the murder. He also spent time reading passages from the book about O.J. Simpson that was written by the police detective Mark Furman. Occasionally, I would remind him that Furman lies about 9/11, but he would continue to insist that Furman can be trusted in regards to O.J. Simpson. Fred also spent time reading me passages from a book about the death of George Patton in an attempt to convince me that his murder was conducted by Americans, not Jews. He also read passages to me from a book about Joseph Stalin and World War II. For some reason, he doesn't want me to think of Stalin as a Jew or a Zionist. I'm not sure if my brief description of Fred will have much meaning to you, but perhaps it will help if you imagine yourself encountering Fred. Imagine walking down the street and passing by an old white van from the 1980s, and imagine seeing a 60-year-old Russian Jew living in that van. Would it occur to you that one of the most important possessions of that homeless man is a cell phone, and that he's using it to make phone calls to me almost every day, and that he reads me passages from books? Would it occur to you that he's also promoting chemtrails and weather machines? Until Fred started calling me, I never would have imagined that a homeless man would spend his time promoting Zionist propaganda. This brings up a very important issue. Namely, why is he doing this? Are other Jews paying him to do this? Or does he feel such an incredibly strong emotional attachment to Jews that he's going to spend his entire life trying to protect Jews, even though most Jews would consider him to be a worthless loser? Many Jews describe themselves as a tribe, and they claim to be incredibly protective of one another. Fred is possibly evidence that this is indeed the case. By the way, some of what Fred told me is actually very interesting. For example, in his lectures about Joseph Stalin, he told me that Stalin and other communist leaders would trick the police and military into helping them get control of a nation, and then after they got control, some of the first people to be killed would be some of those police and military men. Fred told me that the reason the communist leaders would kill some of their own people who helped put them in power is because those men had learned how to work together to overthrow a government, and so the leaders were concerned that since they had already gotten experience with overthrowing a government, they might decide to overthrow the government they just created. And so Stalin and the others would kill some of those men to break apart the network. It's like burning a bridge after you cross it. This makes me wonder how many of the people who assisted with the 9/11 attack were killed by the Jews afterwards. And how many people who helped with the Oklahoma City bombing were killed afterwards? As I mentioned in my previous audio file, we have an expression for this situation. When you sleep with dogs, you get bit by fleas. You have to be careful about who you work with and who you trust. Well, that's my audio file for tonight. Until the next time, bye.